You're very welcome along here to Community Radio York. And as we said earlier on this morning, September the 9th through until September the 12th, Tilting will be hosting their second annual Fela Tilting. Now you might ask, where is Tilting and what is Tilting? Tilting is a very, very small town off the island of Fogo on the eastern seaboard of Canada. And hopefully, maybe in about maybe 5 or 6 minutes' time, about less than a century ago, Marconi spanned the Atlantic with his wireless messages. Hopefully we'll be able to do the same, and we'll be able to do a link between ourselves and a community station that was set up for the Tilting Festival. And we'll be hearing all about Tilting, hopefully, in a couple of moments' time. But indeed, as I said, Tilting is a small town on the eastern end of Fogo Island off the northeast coast of Newfoundland. The community has been designated as a Natural Cultural Landscape District of Canada in 2005 by Parks Canada. But indeed, of course, the Irish Newfoundland connection goes back or spans back about two centuries ago. And indeed, in the studio here with me, I'm joined by Richie Power, and indeed, I'm joined by Nicholas Graves. Nicholas Graves is one of the foremost historians in the Dungarvan area about the Irish Newfoundland connection. Turning to you first, Nicholas, and you're very welcome along to Community Radio, yeah. Nicholas. Nicholas, tell us a little bit about, and what I can't get my head around, but a lot of people can't get their head around, is what's the connection between Ireland and Newfoundland?
Well, fishing, I suppose, and the cod fishing. I mean, you could call it immigration, I suppose. It was immigration that was forced on the fishermen of the time. I think the first fleet went out from Waterford in the 1750s to 60s, around that time. And in those days, you must remember, it had to believe that you could go to Newfoundland in any boats. But they got there anyway, and for the first two seasons they went out there, they usually came home, you know, and some of them married out there. It was a civic marriage, like, you know, when they came home to Waterford then, if they had children, they were baptised in St. Patrick's in Waterford. And it built from that on then, you see, the merchants in Waterford then, They bought out butter, they bought out pork, and they bought anything was needed by the people out there. Because they were only in shanties probably first day when they were out there. You can remember anything before 1800 in Ireland would be a kind of a shanty, a house built, we'll say, with old spires and rushes or something like that. That's what we had here even in the fishing villages, because fishing villages by nature, all around the coast of Ireland, especially the south east coast, any of them, I suppose, even Donegal, they were always poor.
But Nicholas, the climate in Newfoundland is way more harsher than ours. And what drew fishermen to go, we'll say, for an extended period of time to fish off Newfoundland?
They must have found it very, very hard, because the fishermen from the southeast coast of Ireland went to Newfoundland. One thing they had was they hadn't the weather, number one. They could fish the whole year round. Even their boats mightn't be 10 to 16 feet. They were maybe curraghs, built by themselves. Most fishermen built their boats in them days. See, the land in here, they had no problem here, you see. They could sow their own potatoes. But in Newfoundland, they came up with a different thing altogether. There was actually no cultivated land in Newfoundland when they went out there. It was years there. No, there wasn't. It was the Creans there, Nick Crean, who would be well known in Newfoundland. It was his ancestors way back from Newcastle and from around Stradbally area that went out as farmers to cultivate the land for the fishermen that had settled there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
But again, here with the coast, like, why was it just around the south coast that we have an special affiliation with Newfoundland? Like, why wasn't it other countries, like, we'd say, Cornwall, even France, you know? Why didn't those communities, we'd say, do the same thing? Why did the Irish do it?
Well, I suppose Waterford Port was kind of big at the time, and the trade was starting to go in the British colonies, as you know, all over, where there were all British colonies at that time, like.
Yes.
And so I suppose the trade had kind of started maybe before that, so they went out then to fish, you know. And the fishing season in them places in Newfoundland would be very severe. I would be kind of a short season. Like, I mean, there was no way you could fish out there, I'd imagine, when the real winter storms came and the froth and the frost, which we didn't get here.
Of course, was it cod fishing? Was it exclusively cod fishing?
It was. Cod fishing was very big in Dungarvan. Yeah, all the way from Helvic Head to Cape Clear was the Nimta Bank, which was all cod fishing. But for some reason in the 1760s, around that, they disappeared completely. And the next place they turned up was a Newfoundland. So maybe there's a link there that they followed the fish as well. It's never explained why they went.
Yes.
But there's a couple of reasons. One of them is maybe they were probably overfished, you see, at the time. And fish, I suppose, have their own sense the same as us all.
Yes.
There could be a second pint in it. They could be overcome by seals. They could have gone from something, you see. And they went, and that's where they ended up the next time, is off the coast of Newfoundland.
Yeah. But of course, I think, did I hear so much, but the French actually populated first, and they were there for a while.
The French were there first, and then yes. The British took it over in 16-something. Actually, the first governor of Newfoundland, who was a namesake of my own, he was Thomas Graves, believe it or not.
Yeah, and looking at the names, because hopefully in the Newfoundland studio, hopefully very shortly, we hope to be talking to John Green and Mike Boyle. Now, yeah. Their names that you could find anywhere here in this country.
Oh, it's definitely, yeah. Mike Boyle, I think we met Mike Boyle last year, if I'm not mistaken. He was our guide in St. John's for a day. You know,
yes.
I think it was Mike born in Derry, actually.
Yes.
But all southeast of Ireland, you go from the coast of Wexford, Enniscorthy, down there to New Ross, down to Carrick and Shore, back into Dungarvan. All the names out there, like, are all Powers and Foley's, Murphy's, you name it. Like, they're more Irish than the Irish than we are, because they kept all their Irish customs, which I must say, which we have forgotten. I mean, to me now, being out there, I could be saying they could be about 50 years kind of behind time on us. I mean, they still hold kind of toadies in their houses and that. And in the community halls every weekend, they're full to the top with all Irish music. Their sets, their dancing, their waltzes, their storytelling and all that. A thing that's gone here only in pockets in this country. The language is about the only thing that failed them.
Yes,
I think we've got a connection now, haven't we, with Newfoundland?
Hopefully we do have a connection with Newfoundland. Come in, Newfoundland, can you hear us?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me loud and clear?
I can hear you very loud and clear, and indeed you're very, very welcome along here to our listeners here at Community Radio Y'all. Now, may I ask, who am I talking to?
You're speaking to Dan Murphy here.
Dan,
Patrick's Hall in Tilting.
Dan Murphy, my name is Noel Cronin from Community Radio Y'all. And indeed, Dan, you're very, very welcome along, as I said, to the listeners. Dan, this is a historic day for us here in Community Radio Y'all, and I'm sure it is for you too, that it's the first time that we actually made contact with a station like yourselves.
It's just like discovering the new world.
Yes. Dan, can I ask you, tell me all about yourselves there for a start. Describe the situation.
Okay, well, I'm going to have Cyril Burke here from the harbour kind of speak to you for a moment.
My name is Cyril Burke. I'm from Tilting.
Cyril, you're very, very welcome along to our listeners here in Community Radio Y'all. Cyril, can you tell us about your Tilting Festival there?
Well, this got off the ground last year, for the first year, and we're going to be making it an annual event. It was kind of sprung on us by mainly a fellow, Dan Murphy, who's not from Tilting.
Oh, yes.
But is an integral part of the restoration movement here in Tilting.
He's
married to a girl from Tilting. He grew up in PEI, lived in Cornerbrook. He's a retired teacher. And through the community college here, the North Atlantic Community College, they set up this webcast last year. And they call it Filé Tilting. Filé is festival in Gaelic. And so it went from there.
Yes, I do understand, of course, you have a very, very strong Irish connection with us here, and it has been described earlier on the programme that you're more Irish than us ourselves out there in Tilting.
Well, I don't know if you heard John Green on earlier this morning, did you?
No, unfortunately we did not, you know.
Well, John Green is the local historian, got a book wrote on every family that came to Tilting since the 1700s. But what John did this morning, he got myself and another local fellow who's part of the movement here, Jim McGrath, very Irish.
Yes.
And John Green went back through six names that came over from County Cork.
Yes.
And it was the Kennedys, the Hurleys, the Doyles, the Brothers, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. A lot of activity here now.
Yes,
but what he did, he went back through all the years and explained when they came over and how they married and that kind of thing. And we spent about an hour at that this morning. It was very interesting.
Yeah, can you describe to us what Tilting? How big is Tilting?
Tilting is a very small community. It's only about 240 people.
Yes.
But it's got a strong... Now, I got another lady here now, Maureen Foley, who's very much into the Irish connection, has been on several committees. Her and I were on the council together. She had other commitments, so she's no longer there. So maybe it might be a good idea to turn you over to Maureen, and she might be able to further explain and describe some of the movement here, and because she got a lot of connections with Ireland.
Maureen isn't exactly, I suppose, a strange name around here, Nicholas, is it?
No, Fat Sullivan, is it?
Maureen will be finding out now in a couple of moments' time, you know. But again, the population of Tilting in Newfoundland, it's only, as I said, it's only 200 to 300 people.
It's a village, really.
It's a little village, really, you know.
Yeah, but a fishing village.
It's a fishing village, but like Bulabustum, like, you know, yeah. They remind me of the likes of Inch. Or someplace like that, you say.
Yeah, you'll
you know,
be right. You'll
a
be
very, very, and a bit, yeah. What they sound like is a very, very vibrant community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Maureen, can you hear us?
I can indeed, and who am I talking to?
Maureen, my name is Noel Cronin from Community Radio Yall, and as you speak now, you're live on the air here on Community Radio Yall, so you're very welcome to the programme.
Oh my God, thank you so much. It's my pleasure. It's all I can say.
Yeah, Maureen, tell us a little bit about, tell us a little bit about Tilting and the Irish connection.
Well, as Cyril was telling you, you know, our ancestors came directly from Ireland, right, back in the 1700s. And our old Irish cemetery, we call it, is just up behind my house. So I've spent quite a bit of time up in that area. Don't think me strange. And, you know, like there's one headstone that's still left there remaining. And it's the name of Honora Harton, as we would pronounce it in Tilting, Harton. And directly from Yall, and she died in the mid-1800s.
Yes, Harton was the name, was it?
H-A-R-T-O-N, Harton, but like, we pronounced it Harton.
Harton, H-A-R-T-O-N, Harton. And she was you were saying she was from Yall.
She was from Yall.
Yall, yeah. I like the pronunciation Yall, but today you are. But we call it Yall sometimes as well. So we won't hold that against you, Maureen.
But as Cyril was saying, like... you know, I don't know if you go Google Map and Newfoundland. Of course, I'm sure you know where Newfoundland is.
Yes.
And Boko Island is off the northeast coast of Newfoundland. And Tilting is one of 11 communities on Boko Island. But we are the only predominantly Irish Catholic community on the northeast coast of Newfoundland.
Yeah, I do understand that originally it was the French apparently went over there, but the Irish kind of went over there and made it their second home.
Yes, the French and the English, and we have a French canon here in the community that they left here. But the Irish, I guess they came back and forth for fishing in the summertime. And I like to think that they saw so much of Ireland, it was so much like home here in Tilting, that they stayed.
Yes.
And, you know, and to this day, like, we are very proud of our Irish heritage, and we continue the Irish traditions of growing our own vegetables. Tilting has always done it, and the houses, you know, the small houses, we've kept our traditional houses, and family neighborhoods, you know, you have the Foley neighborhood, and the Green neighborhood, and the Brook neighborhood, and, you know, families settled in neighborhoods. And it's just the Irish tradition of the songs and the stories and the way of life. It's just, we've held on to it and we're very proud of it.
Yes, and of course, I presume you celebrate St. Patrick's Day over there as well, don't you? In big time.
Oh my God, are you kidding? Of course we do. we usually have the traditional, like St. Patrick's Day Mass, and with all the hymns to St. Patrick. And we always have the St. Patrick's Parish Club open that night. Sometimes we'll have a traditional St. Patrick's Day concert where, you know, it's a full-fledged formal concert show on stage. Or sometimes we'll just have the traditional way of just sitting around and everyone having a turn at singing, you know?
Yes.
And, of course, the men especially like to, any excuse, they like to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, of course, as we all do, as we all do.
Of course. So It's such a great pleasure to talk to you guys. I can't tell you.
Well, as I say now here, you're live on Community Radio, y'all, and we do appreciate you coming on and talking to us. And again, just before we leave you go there, tell us a little bit about the Tilting Festival. This is the second year of the Tilting Festival, isn't it?
This is the second year for Féile Tilting. Last year, we had a group from Ireland, a group of artists, come to the festival because last year, I don't know if you're familiar with the Festival of the Sea or the Ireland Newfoundland Festival over on your side is taking place this year in Ireland.
Yes, we're getting, actually, I have a brochure right here in front of me.
That's right, and Niall Wall, he was here last year and he's a good friend of mine. And if he's listening, I'd like to say hello to him and all of our friends in Ireland. And so they were in Newfoundland. The festival alternates every year. So they came last year to Newfoundland, to the southern shore. So previous to that, we had our festival here. So they came a bit early. Niall came earlier and came to Tilting for our first Féile Tilting. And he did a traditional workshop on Irish song. His brother came up from the States, Professor Eamon Wall, and he did a writing workshop. We had Deirdre Wadding, a traditional storyteller from Ireland. She did a workshop, and Helena Mulkerns, a photographer and writer, she did a workshop for us. So we had a grand old time last year.
Yeah. Now, we, of course, we here, you see, have a particular affinity, I suppose, for Newfoundland, because the ancestors of the people of Tilting came from Cork, Tipperary, Waterford, Carrigonshore, Yod, and Wexford, Waterford, all around the southern end of the of Ireland. Actually, listeners, or should I say, fishermen went to Newfoundland.
Exactly, exactly. And I have to tell you that I visited Ireland in 97, myself and four other women, and I'm coming back in 3 years' time for my 25th wedding anniversary, but I'll never forget it was in Killarney and I had to buy in a jewellery store buying some rings, right? Mm-hmm. And I signed the paper, signed my name, and the girl said, Maureen Foley, there's a Maureen Foley works here, and I know another Maureen Foley up the road. I'm like, okay.
You're ten a penny, Maureen. You're ten a penny around here. Maureen, just before you go, I want to put you onto our panel here because we have a couple of people here that want to have a quick word with you.
Maureen, I'm Pat Riley. It's my programme that you're on at the present moment. In the studio with me, I've got two blokes who have been to Newfoundland, to your place for the festival last year. That's Nicholas Graves and Richie Power. And they both sure want to have a word with you.
Yes, Maureen, we do, yeah. I've been to Newfoundland. I've been lucky, I was fortunate. I've been there twice, actually. And
you've been doubly blessed.
But anyway, I'll tell you a story, Maureen. When I was billeted with Michael and Nora Hogan up in Branch, you know Branch pretty well, I presume.
I know, Branch.
Yeah, when I went to the door, Michael Hogan came out and he said to me, I said to him, what's your Irish ancestors? And he said to me, all I know, he said, all belong to me came from Dungarvan, he said, in County Waterford. And he said, my grandfather was Michael Hogan. Well, actually, I had granduncle Michael Hogan that was buried in Dungarvan, so I must probably be related to him. And the wife then, Nora Hogan, came along and she said, my name is Mooney, she said, and all my ancestors came from Dungarvan. The sad thing about it, Maureen, here is the fact that the records here doesn't start until after 1800. So we lost the period that's really we need to get at from Newfoundland. Only for John Mangan, as you know, in the University of St. John. I mean, the connection with Ireland and Newfoundland would be dead and gone by now.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I do understand, of course, Maureen. I know there's activity going on there in the background as well. You're obviously in the community centre at the moment, are you?
Yes, we are. We're in St. Patrick's Parish Hall Club.
Yes. So there is activity going on there at the moment. I hear music and whatnot on the stage at the moment.
Music and food, yes. I mean, that's amazing that the Harton, like the gentleman was just saying.
Yes.
You know, Honora Harton.
Yes, and as I say, it bears out the connection that we have and the very, very deep-rooted connection. And, you know, our roots go back, and your roots go back a long, long way. Like, and again, as we go back two or three centuries, you know?
That's right. And, I mean, a lot of, we found in research that a lot of the Irish in some other places in Newfoundland, they touched in Tilting first. And that was the point from which they started and went to other areas in Newfoundland. So that was interesting.
Yeah, so basically, Tilting was a kind of a stopping off point, basically. That was the first point, I suppose, that they hit, was it?
That's right. That's right. Because we're on the eastern side of the island, right?
Yes. Well, you know, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to Maureen, and can I again congratulate you on your festival out there. And I do hope that this will be the first of many links between ourselves and yourselves in Tilting in Newfoundland.
I hope so too.
That's Maureen Foley there. Thank you very much, Maureen, there for that. Lads, a connection with Newfoundland and indeed Ireland, Newfoundland there. And what Maureen was saying there, she touched on that every second year ye go over and they come over, I understand. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Now, there is a festival, of course, coming up, Ireland Newfoundland Festival, coming up between the 18th and the 10th and the 26th, I think, isn't it? The 18th and the 26th. And Richie, you might be able to tell us all about that.
Yeah, well, it's starting on next Friday. They're coming in on next Friday. We have around 50 coming from Newfoundland. And we'll be meeting in Lawless Hotel in Dungarvan. That's where they will meet their their billets, as they call them. People will take them in for the number of days that they're around.
I see.
Is that reciprocated when you go there?
It's the same. Yeah.
Ah, yes.
So that's on the Friday night, and on the Saturday, then we have a welcome meeting and lunch in Dungarvan Town Hall. That's at 12 o'clock, and then we have a Newfoundland photo and film exhibition in the Dungarvan Library. We have at 2 o'clock then we have the launch of the Embigans Trail, Dungarvan. And then we have at 15:30 we have Dungarvan Town Walk.
By John Young, as you
By John
Young. Oh, of course, John Young. You're no stranger to us here in Community Radio, y'all at all.
No.
And then on that night at 8 o'clock we have the opening ceremonies of the festival and dinner in Lawless Hotel. So that's on the Saturday. And on the Sunday then, we have Mass in Arn Ryan. Mass will be in Gaelic.
Yes.
And then we have a kind of a brunch then after that.
Yeah, that's brunch in the hall, yes.
Mm. And then we will have at 2 o'clock then.
Arn Ryan, more than y'all.
Yeah, communities, yeah.
If they'd be able to fit in y'all, I don't know, time could be very, very short.
And then we have a historical talk by Julian Walton in Dungarvan Museum.
Julian Walton is our historian for the whole southeast of Ireland.
I understand that.
He's our equal to John Mangan in Newfoundland.
Yeah. He is, yeah.
Yes.
And then that night at 8 o'clock, we have a ceilidh at the crossroads, which will be in the Marine Bar in Pulla.
Do they have that in Newfoundland?
They have this in Newfoundland as well.
They probably have the equivalent, I suppose.
They follow the same kind of pattern, yeah.
They follow the same kind of pattern, yeah.
It's actually better there. They put us to shame, I'll be honest.
Yeah. Do they?
Yeah.
Would they?
They really love their music and they, you know. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's sad that they put you to shame.
Well, I know it is,
that you have to try to do better.
When you look at this country today, you see, only for Curtis Curtori coming in, like, our music would probably have been gone, like, you know, wouldn't it?
Yes.
We have only pockets of the Irish language, like, you see. I mean, we had all them things going back, we say, to 1900 at least, you know. And unfortunately, whatever people say about it, we've lost more since we've regained our freedom for 26 counties than we lost for 400, 600 or 700 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when we were under oppression and an oppressed people.
Yes.
You know, we kept everything we had. And another point...
It was more precious then, I suppose.
Yes, it was more precious. Well, you hadn't the communications with the outside world. You lived in the community, you see.
That's right, yeah.
What it is. I mean, the penal laws now, they were kind of finished up around 1784. Religion was oppressed with the penal laws and the time of Cromwell kept Ireland in the 1650s. And as far as I know, it is only in Ireland and in Newfoundland the penal laws were put into force.
Come here.
And the mess rocks, I was there now, the first time we were there, we had a beautiful mess down, I just can't think of the best one, on a mess rock set by the bishop.
Yeah.
Now, we had mess rocks in this country. We had one in my area over in North Parish. And when we got mad at them with Jerrignite in the 1950s, Waterford County Council blew it up in the air.
Good God.
The only mess rock was here from here to my head.
Yes, and I do understand that, again, we were talking about the French and the English in Tilting in Newfoundland there. And when the English settled there, apparently, the Irish came over, and of course, they didn't want the mass to be celebrated over there, so they put a ban on it.
They abandoned it. The penal laws were the only two countries that the law was enforced.
Yeah, but there was more Irish came over there, and the English had kind of had to quietly walk away.
Oh, well, all the Irish Luke, I'm saying John down there for about maybe 100 miles, that was all the Irish community.
Yes,
I mean, you must remember Newfoundland is three times the size of Ireland.
Yes, of course.
There's only about a half a million people there.
Yes.
Plenty of space.
If you get planning permission there, like they got it.
Well, Sinskele Elevator.
Sinskele Elevator. There's actually 150,000 of them living in St. John's.
Mm. Is that?
Maybe we could send a few builders over there and build a few houses.
They're building communities, branching all of them. They're only our small places. Yeah. Like what they are, Moore or Gary Vaux, them would be 50 years ago.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
They stay together. They have to stay together. They're dependent on one another to live, you see. A Scarfy Caelish and Martin Nadine, as they say in the old all Irish, you know. Mm. And so... But the priest might have to come to them to say mass maybe once a month or something.
Yes.
Do you know the way I mean?
And I suppose the way things are going, we'll probably go back to that again.
It's as dear as it is at the moment, the same as us. Like, I mean, we're in the same boat as they are there because we have only two masses in our parish at home. They're lucky to have one in some places, you know.
Yes.
They're just the same system.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I ask you about, again, and we're returning back, I suppose, to the fishermen that left here.
Yeah.
The type of vessels that they went in Newfoundland, like, it must have been a terrible crossing over the North Atlantic.
Well, they didn't go from here on fishing boats, I'd say.
They went
with the trading ships and all that.
Trading ships and, salt ships and that kind of thing,
As far as I can gather, there was none of the boats that fished out of Newfoundland. They were all built in Nova Scotia. I don't think there was any building yet there. I inquired about that one time. Yeah. Nova Scotia. They were building the boats, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. When you go over there, I mean, do you have the Irish dancing, like, you know, young kids, are they interested in Irish dancing, anything like that?
Well, funny thing, last year when we were over there, I saw 12 youngsters between the age of 6 and 14 with 12 pen accordions up on the stage.
Yes.
No. So they take it that serious, it's tradition.
So just like the Canary School of Dancing here.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Same thing.
And could they play music?
Yeah, they could play music.
They were brilliant.
What is that?
Fantastic,
The only thing they haven't is the language. And they have words there now, like, we'll say, a crowbean and, you know...
A couple of the words that we'd all, a couple of fuckers that we'd all have, I suppose. They'd have a couple of words over there,
The older, especially the older generation.
Yeah, of course, they brought the language with them, and they brought the culture with them, and everything.
Of course, the language was banned there, you see. Like, I mean, the language was banned here, too, like, you know.
Yes.
Can we take you back to quickly run through the rest of the agenda?
There was one thing I meant to mention there, was it on the Sunday, there's a tour of Ardmore and Yawn on Sunday as well.
On Sunday, yes.
You know, if...
Grand.
You know, people keep a lookout for that.
Yeah, if anybody wants to participate in that.
Monday, then, there's a tour of Lismore Castle and Mount Mellery Abbey. And then they're starting to move out of our area then. They go down to Newtown then for lunch and things. And they're in the Waterford then, Dooley's Hotel that night. There's another do there. Dancing and all this.
Well, there's no shortage of entertainment, isn't it?
Full 10-day programme.
Yes.
And about two nights they spend in every place, like from Greg Naman on to Scott, the Carrick and Shoe.
Yes.
You know, that's about two.
So it's a very, very full schedule.
Yeah, and they go to Tipperary, Carlow. Yeah.
Carrick and Shore. For some reason, I don't know why, because, I mean, Lismore, there was a big amount of fishermen went out there from Lismore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has something to do probably with the castle, with the Duke, I would presume, you know. I mean, Yarl, you must remember, in them days, was a great port. I mean, they were trading with Liverpool.
Of course, Yarl was the port, was the gateway to the south of Ireland.
Even going to America before Corkshire, I mean... There were several people from my place, now which is 15 miles from here, used to walk to Yard to get a boat to Liverpool.
Yes.
Even, and moreover, when they were going to Australia and to Hobart and Tasmania, them places.
Yes.
You know, that's the way they came. You'd have to get to Liverpool.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Well,
it's been an absolutely fascinating half hour. And of course, as I said, the highlight of it was the connection with our friends there in Newfoundland. Yes. Hopefully we'll be able to go back at them at 5:30 there. Yeah. I think we kind of caught him on the hop, lad, to tell the truth.
Too early, yeah.
I think we're too early for him, but we caught him on the hop and everything, you know. Right. But the early bird catches the worm in that sense.
Absolutely,
you know? Again, just before we finish up, lads, the festival there, we'll continue on this. other events in the festival. I see there's hurling matches with Ivanhoe Swat, and that's the thing that I forgot to ask Maureen outside the sports and hurling and that kind of thing.
Do they have hurling over there?
Well, last year we had a hurling match in Bay Bulls, which was the first hurling match in how long?
100 years.
In over 100 years.
Good God.
They say that the Irishmen brought hockey into Newfoundland and part of America one time.
Of course, Canada is very, very strong on hockey, isn't it?
They played with sticks on the ice. Mm. But there was hurling they were playing, but they didn't realise it. So it turned out to ice hockey, the hockey after that.
My God. Yeah. We'll have to train the Kilkenny team how to play that. Again, we'll take. Well, I know the time is catching up, but we'll finish the festival again. Just to remind our listeners there that the festival is on from September the 18th to the September the 26th. And there's all kinds of things happening in it.
It's finishing up on Sunday the 26th in with Mass in New Ross and a holiday Mass in Tagmon in Whitesford.
So we would advise any listeners there, especially around the All area there, if you want to get involved in it at all there is a tour on Sunday the 19th of September there of on Ryan Ardmore in the All communities. There's a tour of there and everybody can bring a local can get involved in that.
Yes, and anyone that want to come down to the festivals are quite welcome, you know. The more the merrier.
Yeah. Yeah. Have we a telephone contact in case any listener out there wants to get involved or wants to get involved in the Irish Newfoundland? Have we a telephone number? I'm looking at the brochure here. Have we any telephone number or contact number? Yeah, I do know that we have a website on it, but that's kind of utterly useless to people who haven't got the website who is in the phone. So if we had a phone number.
I give you an 087.
087.
66.
66.
12. 665.
665. Again, if anybody wants any more information.
Contact Richie on that.
On the Ireland Newfoundland Festival there. If they want to contact anybody. Again, the festival is running from September the 18th to the 26th, 2010. And it's running all over the southeast of Ireland there. If they want any more information, they can contact Richie on 087-6612-665. Again, my many thanks there to Maureen Foley and to Dan there in Newfoundland there for establishing the connection there. And indeed to Richie Paul for coming in. This evening at very short notice, I must add, and Nicholas Graves coming in at very short notice as well. So thanks very much, lads, for coming in and talking to us.
Broadcasting to your town and the surrounding rural area on 104 FM, you're in tune with Community Radio York.
Community Radio Yall is continuing to expand its range of programmes. We'd especially like to hear from people who are interested in writing and reading news and sports bulletins, and anyone who's interested in getting involved in sports programming. This would be ideal for you if you're hoping to learn new skills, gain media experience, contribute to your community, or add to your CV. To get more information or register your interest, please contact Dara or Declan at Community Radio Yall on 024 91199 or email programmes@yallradio.com.
Parks Entertainment Centre Yall, the fantastic fun fair experience, specialising in the art of fun making. Fantastic special offer prices at Parks birthday parties from Monday the 6th of September. Book a birthday party for Friday and the birthday child goes free. Or why not avail of one of our weekend offers? Amazing offers when you book a deluxe or jumbo deluxe party. All parties include party meal, the birthday card and certificate, ice cream birthday cake, party hats, group photograph, tea or coffee for mum and dad. Height restrictions and terms and conditions apply. For the details, visit our website at perksfunfair.com. Perks Entertainment Centre proudly sponsors Thursday's You're Ready for This with Shane Supple.
Absolute Flowers, 29 North Main Street, Yall. Stock us of a huge selection of fresh silk or dry flowers, centrepieces and bouquets. We have balloons for every occasion and now we have banners and balloon bouquets in stock or made to order. And we provide a full personal wedding consultation service. We've a huge selection of hanging baskets and window boxes now in stock and a full range of winter bedding plants arriving shortly. Absolute Flowers, call us now on 024 91222. Absolute Flowers proudly sponsor Friday's Yall Ready for This.
Sacred Roots presents Roots by Yall Tosspot Music Group, a brilliant compilation of original music from young musicians, featuring the songs Recession, Another Day, and the Roots single Mirror Mirror. Book Roots now on iTunes, from Cree's Card Shop or Tom Scott's North Main Street, Yall, or through the Sacred Roots website. Roots by the Hotspot Music Group, out now. Sacred Roots Productions, helping people realise their potential through music.
Yall at 5, weekdays 5 to 6.30 on Community Radio Yall with
Shirley. Interviews, chat, great music, news and sport and much more.
And Stanley at Current Affairs, jokes, information, gig reviews, all sorts of stuff. Great competitions as well from time to time.
And Eddie, I look at the newspapers, ask politicians the difficult questions. I want to hear from you. What are the issues that concern you, the listeners?
Yall at 5. Have you discovered it yet?
Broadcasting to Yall Town and the surrounding rural area on 104 FM, you're in tune with Community Radio Yall.
We're heading back now to Newfoundland, to Tilting in Newfoundland, or shouldn't we?
I think we're ready to go back to Tilting in Newfoundland. We're getting the nod here from our technical advisor. Good evening again, Newfoundland.
Hello, it's John Carrick-Green saying hello from Tilting to y'all. I'm going to pass to Cyril Burke, who wants to say hello.
Jim McGrath.
Jim McGrath and Cyril Burke.
Hello, Jim McGrath from Tilting and Newfoundland. I know a little bit about y'all from growing up. There was a headstone in the old cemetery here from a gentleman, a young lad who left y'all many, many years ago and is buried in Tilting, and I'm sure John will mention him. But anyway, I visited y'all and I met with some people there, and it was a memorable experience for me.
Yes, and indeed we were saying there earlier on, I think, that the connection, there's a very, very deep-rooted connection between Tilting, Newfoundland, and indeed Yall and Dungarvan, you know. In fact, all around the southeast coast there was a great fishing connection. Can you tell us a little bit about Tilting in Newfoundland?
John Carrick-Green, yes, I'll give you a little brief introduction to Tilting.
Yes, John.
It's situated on an island off the northeast coast of Newfoundland. And when I was growing up, I could look out at the Atlantic Ocean from my back window. And my grandmother used to say, pointing out across the ocean, that's where Ireland is. And I began to dream of one day visiting Ireland. And I'm still dreaming about it. I haven't been there yet.
Oh.
So Tilting was settled by the English first. As a migratory fishery, sometime after the War of the Spanish Succession, sometime after 1713, and very shortly afterwards, the Irish began to come here. The Irish were involved in the migratory fishery as schooner owners and as merchants and as fishing servants, and Tilting was soon taken over by the Irish, and by 1790, Tilting Harbour was completely dominated by the Irish, and the English had all been displaced.
Yes.
So we have a huge contingent of 18th century Irish families who settled here in Tilting. They're the old families.
Yeah, we kind of
newer families, yeah, as well.
We kind of pushed the English out, I suppose, didn't we?
Oh yes, we did a wonderful job there. We did a great job, better job than you did.
Yeah,
we did them pretty fast.
Well, it took us 700 years, you know, and I mean that now, just I mean that in jest, you know. But it took us 700 years, but you got rid of them far quicker. Again, Tilting is a very, very small community off the is it off Fogo Island, isn't it?
Yes, it is on Fogo Island. It was a small harbour, but a very safe and commodious harbour, close to very, very prolific fishing grounds. By 1790, every inch of shoreline space had been taken by the Irish, and so they began to move out around to the little coves nearby and to the further north on the what we call the French shore on the northern part of Newfoundland. You needed shoreline space to conduct the kind of fishery that was paying money at that time. So Tilting Harbour is small geographically, but its culture is extensive culture. It's very, very deep and very, very rich. with numerous neighbourhoods, very distinctive neighbourhoods of families who came from Waterford, Wexford, Southern Kilkenny, Southern Tipperary and Cork.
And of course, there's a musical connection as well, isn't there? Because a lot of the the tunes, you know, that we basically are taken from Irish tunes, you know, and a lot of your traditional players would basically be much the same as our own, wouldn't they?
Our musical traditions are all Irish, and they're quite extensive here in Tilting, going back to the very beginnings of Irish settlement. And I'm referring to the ballad singing, the songwriting, the playing of musical instruments, and the step dancing. All of these are based in Irish traditions, although in the step dancing, we've added some variations here in Tilting of our own, so that it is a distinctive variation of its own.
Yes, and of course, I suppose you will find that, as music, we said, transgresses all boundaries there. You will find that each and every culture that, we'll say, imports, for want of a better word, imports music from somewhere, they will modify it and they will actually tailor it for their own use.
Well, of course, it's the creative genius of the Irish, isn't it?
Yes.
We have it here. We have the homegrown creative genius. And this creative genius here has led us to adapt the Irish language to our own ways, the Irish ways of building boats and homes, and we've adapted the Irish music and the Irish dancing, but in particular the Irish dancing, and we've adapted it, and it goes back quite a piece here, the step dancing. For instance, the McGraths, who came from a place called Ballingulkey in Waterford, they were here 18th century people who spoke Gaelic, and they were famous dancers. One of the celebrated characters amongst the McGraths was Old Davy, as they called him. He was born in 1818, but people talk about him around here as if he were born yesterday. Old Davy lived to be 90.
Yes.
Which means he lived into the period whereby my own grandparents could remember him very well, or were already adults. He didn't die until 1908. Now, Old Davy was a famous step dancer, and when he was in his late 80s, he stood on the back on a behind a chair, leaning on the back of a chair, and taught my granduncle Martin McGrath his dances and his steps. And Uncle Martin McGrath has gone down in our history as the most famous step dancer of all, particularly with regards to a dance called the single. So he learned that dance in the 1890s from his grandfather, Old Davy, who, of course, must have brought it from Ireland because it's so old.
Yes.
It goes back quite a piece.
And again, turning our attention, I suppose, to the fishermen, we said that, that got into boats and that we took the journey to Newfoundland. And earlier on, we were talking to, I think it was Maureen Foley there. And Maureen was saying about, it must have been a terrible, terrible journey for these fishermen, we'd say, to go up to cross the North Atlantic to Newfoundland in all kinds of weather.
Well, now I'm going to have a few comments on that, but there's a guy standing next to me, a master mariner, captain of the Fogo Island Ferry, Cyril Burke, and Cyril may want to make a few comments on that and introduce himself first before I make a few comments as well. Here's Cyril for you.
Stand on. Oh, I'm unplugged. Oh. You come out of that there.
This one?
Yeah, we're in, no, intro there, huh? Intro the end here, huh?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello,
Cyril.
Hello. Hello, Cyril Burke. You're very, very welcome to our station here, Community Radio Y'all. We're transmitting live, just to let you know, to Y'all Town, surrounding area, and indeed on the World Wide Web. Cyril, you're very you're very, very welcome to the programme. Now, you'd have an in-depth knowledge of the hazardous journey that fishermen long ago would have taken to aboard schooners and the like and travelled the unbelievable journey to Newfoundland to codfish.
Yes, well, I'd just like to say that, my name is Cyril Burke, and I grew up here in Tilting. And as Johnny said, I grew up only two or three houses away from where Johnny grew up. So when the seas rolled in from the Atlantic, the first place they struck was right behind our houses. And Fogo Island itself, Tilting is one of the nine communities on Fogo Island, and we're at the east end of it, so that, and that's the exposed end of it, so the communities over on the west side have more shelter. So yes, getting back to your question about the perilous journey that he would have had, it's amazing to us modern-day mariners how they managed to get back and forth across the open Atlantic with the equipment or the limited equipment that they had at that time.
Yes, of course. You know, you again, you had no such thing as radar or direction finder or anything at all. You hadn't wireless nor anything at all on board ships. It was just a journey of luck and of fate, you know. And I suppose there's been, you know, a fair number of unfortunate sailors who went to their who went to Davy Jones' locker, you know.
Oh, for sure.
On the journey.
They had, not only had they no technology, but they had no engines. This was all sail back in those days.
Yes. Yes.
And they brought families, and they went back and forth. They come over in the spring and go back in the fall. And it's simply amazing to us. And not only that, but they had to build their own schooners and boats. And they had no power, no power tools, no equipment. Bare necessities is all they had.
But I often wonder, Cyril, what actually drove those fishermen to, we'd say, you know, go cod fishing off Newfoundland. One theory we heard earlier on was the very fact that the cod, the shoals of cod here had basically dried up and they had moved further north up the Atlantic, you know, up towards Canada and Newfoundland, you know?
Well, yes, that was the belief that back in those days, fish, the waters were teeming with fish, and we have no reason to doubt that because even in our time and my father's time, fish was considered plentiful then. The cod traps and the gear that they used was yielding good harvest. And for the most part, although there was some years, I guess, depending on temperatures and conditions, that the fishery didn't offer as well. But for the most part, those years, the fish were considered plentiful. And I guess that's what made them seek a better living was, I guess, most of the livelihoods then depended on the marine fishery. And so if the fishery was plentiful, I guess there was promise of a better life.
Yes, and indeed, when fishermen set sail out, they usually, like, when they, you know, they boarded schooners and the like to go on these fishing exhibitions for maybe a couple of months of the year or so, even the best part of a year, over a year, 2 years or such. And they never came, a lot of them never came back. A lot of them settled, as you said, in places like Tilting and other parts of Newfoundland.
That's right, yes. And John is well versed in that field because he is I guess our local historian and has written an extensive book on the genealogy of Tilting, tracing all the names and how long they stayed and who they married and that kind of thing. So I don't profess to be well versed in the history as much as John. Of course, John is very knowledgeable in that. I won't take up any more time. I'm sure John got lots to offer to the history of the connection between Ireland and Tilting.
Well, and Cyril, can I thank you very much for being part of the programme today? And
yes.
I hope this is the first of many links to Newfoundland we will be doing.
Yeah, well, we're very grateful and hope that it won't be the last time. And again, you're kindly welcome and thank you for joining us.
Indeed, thank you very much for that. Now, hopefully,
so I'll turn you over to John now.
Very good. Again, just to remind listeners there, you're tuned, of course, to Community Radio All, broadcasting here to you all tone on 104 megahertz on analog and indeed to World Wide Web right around the world. This is a live transmission. This is actually a first for Community Radio All. Marconi, I do believe, spanned the airwaves right nearly back, nearly a century ago there with his wireless signals and his famous dash dish dash, I think, from Padlow and Cornwall up to Newfoundland there. But we're doing it today via Skype and indeed our grateful thanks there to Mr. Justin Maher, who's standing in, manning all the controls for us. This digital technology is getting a bit beyond me at times, but there you are. John Green, I think, are you there for us?
Yes, I am here.
John, you're very welcome to the programme.
Well, I'm delighted to hear from you and delighted to talk to you. It's great to make a connection with Cork, like this one, because Tilting has so many connections with Cork. Now, I'll elaborate on that a little, if you don't mind, and if you prefer me to go back and comment on the perilous journey part, I'd like to tell a story about that, too, if we have time.
Be my guest.
So which part do you want first?
I'd say the perilous story now, just to spice up, to whet our appetite. Right?
Okay. All right. I have an ancestor, and his name is William Green, and he was born in 1820, and he was going through the ice fields by the time he was 12 and 13 years old.
God bless us.
Now, the first time he went to the ice fields was with a fellow Captain William Burke in Burke's schooner.
Right.
Now, Burke named his schooner after, well, what a peculiar name he chose for his schooner. You'll never guess. Now, Burke was a Dungarvan man, a Waterford man. Do you know he called his schooner after a celebrated Cork rascal? Do you know what his name was?
Yes.
Daniel O'Connell.
Oh, God bless us. So we know him well, Daniel O'Connell. I thought you were going
well,
to
they
say...
They had a bit of a shipwreck.
Yes.
And William Green had his legs crushed.
Yes.
And he took his father, took his, him in his own schooner, and he went over to Ireland to get medical attention. So it was just as going back and forth across the ocean for William Green in those days was just as common as me getting on a plane and going to Ottawa or to Dublin. It was no trouble at all. The first journey might have been a perilous one, especially when you're bringing women and children, but it became a very common occurrence. William Green went back and forth to Ireland in the 19th century time and time again. In fact, once he was in Belfast, and a woman there did a very rash thing. She fell in love with him.
Oh, yes.
And he might have been married back here at the time, but anyway, he wrote a song after he came home about it, and the song is still extant here in Tilting. I have copies of it. Now, William Green, believe it or not, was a Carrickanshure Green. You know, all of us Greens are from Carrickanshure. He was the son of the first Green who came here and started our family tree. Now, they're a later crowd. We call them the new crowd who came in the 19th century.
The blow-ins.
And the Burke,
they're
and,
only the blow-ins.
The Burks and the Houghtons and all that crowd from Cork came much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But the Greens, after fishing with the Burks and sailing and so on, got their own big schooners, and William himself eventually became a mercantile agent for a substantial Newfoundland for fishing firm, and he did everything besides producing fish. He bought fish and sold fish, produced cod liver oil, and sold fishing supplies as well. So the Greens were into the business pretty soon after they arrived here. The first of those Greens who came was a school teacher. But anyway, let's get back to Cork. I want to talk about a few Cork connections. So I'll combine it with some comments about the perilous trip. The first crossings might have been perilous ones, you know, for a new couple. Like the first time taking a trip anywhere might have been a perilous one. And people form and create and tell stories about their first trips any place. But if you're bringing a wife and young children, it would be a really great challenge. Now, Tom Kennedy was one of those from Cork. He was from Cloyne, it appears, and he was, in my estimation, from my research, I've estimated his birth at around 1750-55 in Cloyne.
In Cloyne.
How far is Cloyne now from Cork City? You're in Cork City?
No, we're not in Cork City. We're a border town between Cork and Waterford. So we're actually only...
You're in no man's land, are you?
Well, no, I won't say we're in no man's land, depending on which way the hurling goes. But Cloyne is only about maybe about 15, 16 kilometres from here.
Well, Tom Kennedy, he was married there around 1785, thereabouts. And he had a couple of children there before he and the wife and a couple of children left there around 1798-99 or thereabouts. And ended up here in Tilting, where they had four or five more children between 1800 and 1810. So for him and his wife and the young children coming out, you know, it would have been a perilous journey that would have perhaps deterred anybody in those days, given the fact it would take 30 to 40 days at sea. And a lot of that would have been pretty heavy seas, too, especially
yes.
out Newfoundland.
Of course, yes.
But eventually the Kennedys, like all the rest of the crowd here, became very used to seagoing. And crossed, crisscrossed back and forth across the Atlantic and to St. John's and to Boston and to Nova Scotia and PEI time and time and over and over and over again. It became just as common as taking your car today and driving to Waterford or Dublin or Galway City or St. John's or any place.
Yes.
So they became quite familiar with it. And speaking of Cork families, I'll just tell you one little more a story. The Doyles. We had a famous Doyle family who were here from Cork, and also a famous Hurley family. Hurleys are still here. They came from Cork. Richard Cronin started a family here from Yall. He came here around 1815 and started a family, and we have several pieces of our landscape named after Cronin. Cronin's Gulch, Cronin's Pond, etc. And we have a Brothers family from Yall who are here at the same time as Cronin, but they died out in the 19th century.
Well, isn't that...
And above all... Pardon? Go ahead.
Isn't that absolutely fascinating, though, because my name is Cronin from Yall. So there's a Glutch named after me, folks, believe it or believe it not. Well, I don't know, but all my gang are up around from North Cork side, you know. But it is interesting you mentioned the Cronin name from Yall, because Cronins were in Yall for a long, long time, you know.
Well, my God, just imagine. That's so interesting. And what's your first name?
Noel. Noel Cronin.
Nolan Cronin.
Yeah, Cronin.
C-R-O-N-I-N.
It's probably been abbreviated, I suppose, to Cronin, because Cronin actually is the Irish for Cronin.
Yes, it was always pronounced Cronin here, and the spellings vary in the records and on the tombstone. It's I-N, and sometimes it's E-E-N. And I've seen also a Y where the I is today and the E-E.
Well, we're the so I-N variety.
Cronin. Old Cronin, I'd like to send you a special greeting from old Uncle Dick Cronin.
Ah,
long since dead.
Long since dead. I wonder.
His tombstone still stands. He died here in 1864, and he was a very successful planter with a schooner and a couple of fishing servants, and he did very well here.
Well, there you are now. Local boy does good.
That's right. We had a very famous Coleman family here, too, from Cork City.
Yes.
John Coleman was born there in 1800, and he came here around the same time as Cronin came. But tuberculosis wreaked havoc on the family in the 19th century, and the only ones who survived were two who went off to the United States. Thankfully, they did survive because we've been in contact with their descendants, and some of them may very well be listening to us today. One of them lives in Washington and works for the Library of Congress and has been in contact here and contact with me frequently since I published my book on the genealogies of tilting.
Absolutely fascinating stuff. Absolutely fascinating. Look, I know, lads, that time is of the utmost importance to ye as well as the utmost importance to us, and I think we're actually slightly running out of time. And again, John, can I thank you for your very, very, very valuable contribution to today's programme?
Noel, I'm delighted to speak to you and to hear from you, and even more delighted to know you're from Cork, and even more delighted again to know your name is a Cronin.
Well, there you are. Well,
I hope Uncle Dick is listening.
Well, tell Uncle Dick I was asking for him. All right.
I certainly will.
Okay, John Green and Jim McGrath and Cyril, can I thank you very, very much for participating in our live programme this evening. And again, it comes live from Tilting in Newfoundland. Can I wish you the very, very best of luck with the remainder of your festival? And indeed, hopefully, this will be the first connection of many that we have established today. As I say, today is a historic day for Community Radio, to say that we can actually make a live link to Newfoundland via the Skype system in the computer. And can I wish you the very, very best, and it'll be the first of many, I do know.
Well, I want to thank you very much. And the guy sitting next to me, Cyril Burke, has a country cabin in the woods in Cronin's Gulch. Maybe you'll see it someday.
Maybe
I want you to come and stay there.
Very good. Maybe I might take him up on that offer, John. Tell John I might take him up on that offer. Can I thank you, lads, very, very much for participating in the programme?
Neil?
Yes?
Or Noel?
Yes?
Cyril was serious. I think he's got an offer thrown out to you where his cabin is in Cronin's Gulch. I think Cyril, being the kind of a fellow man to his word, he says, no problem, he can come over and stay in my cabin.
Well, I tell you...
So that's an offer to you.
Well, I'll tell him I'll be packing my toothbrush and comb and heading out into the wild blue yonder about to do that. I might take him up on that offer. Once we have the
Perfect.
Contacts made.
Perfect, Noel. Take it easy.
Okay, thanks very much, lads, for that. There you are.
Okay, well, just a second now, Noel.
Yes?
Noel, we're sharing a headset, you see, and Cyril doesn't have one at the present time.
Oh,
and
yes.
We just remarked that we don't think that Uncle Dick, when he came in 1815, might have packed his toothbrush.
He didn't. How did Uncle Dick clean his teeth? I must ask the ancestors how they managed yes. that. You know?
Well, Cyril has the best chance. If he ever appears in Cronin's Gulch, we'll ask him.
Yeah, exactly. If he ever appears that night. They probably got scurvy or something on the way over or whatever the case may be.
We better go before we get involved in ghost stories.
Yeah, exactly.
Ghost stories like the Irish ones go on forever.
Well, as we say here in Ireland, Shinske Lele Maradaranar. Shinske Lele. That's a story for another day, as the fella says. Okay, thanks, lads. Again, thank you very much for establishing the link with us. And indeed, we look forward again to the pleasure of your company in the very near future.
Thank you.
Thanks, lads. Bye-bye. There's our connection there with Tilting Newfoundland and indeed... and Labrador there. And again, may I thank most sincerely John Green, John McGrath and Cyril Brown there.
Broadcasting to Yalltown and the surrounding rural area on 104 FM. You're in tune with Community Radio Yall.
Yall Car Valeting, Seafield Business Centre Yall behind Perks. Open Monday to Friday, 8:30 to 5:30 and Saturday by appointment. We are delighted to offer complete valeting service for your vehicle. A full range of cleaning and polishing services for the inside and outside of your car. Car Valeting and Body Cleaning Specialist providing a flexible tailor-made service to suit your needs, including car wash and clean, mini valet and full valet. Contact Michael on 087 283 7754 for your free quote. Yall Car Valeting, Seafield Business Centre Yall. Your car looking like new.
When the unthinkable happens, why not give Buckley's Crash Repairs a call? We handle insurance claims from all leading insurance companies, including AXA, Hibernian Aviva, FBD and Quinn Insurance. We're experts in panel beating and spray painting, computerised colour matching and jigging are a speciality. Call us now on 024-91065 or 087-793-4646. Buckley's Crash Repairs, Seafield Business Centre, Yall, because accidents happen.
Farrell's Bar Summerfield, the ideal party venue for birthdays, christenings, the day after your wedding or any occasion. We're child and wheelchair friendly, so whether it's a quiet drink you're after or the latest sporting event in high definition, we've got it covered. Check us out on Facebook for upcoming events or give us a call on 024-92233. We'd like to thank all our customers for your continued support. Farrell's Bar Summerfield, sponsors of Good Morning Y'all with Mick Sheehan.
Poppy, 17 North Main Street, Yall. Yall's newest fashion outlet. Our first winter collection has just arrived. Fabulous knits, tunics, shawls and tops. Unique style at very affordable prices. Deposits taken. Trying to accessorise? Poppy's your destination store. To complement our winter collection, we've the largest range of bags, jewellery and belts in stock. We would like to thank all our customers for their support during our first 6 months in business. Poppy, 17 North Main Street, Yall. Looking forward to offering you unique style with a high quality and excellent service this winter.
Community Radio Yall broadcasts to Yall Town and the surrounding areas, including Ardmore, Clashmore,
Kinsalebeg, Knockanore, Inch,
Castle Marta, Killa,
and Ballymacorda.
In our recent survey, authorised by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, a whopping 78% of respondents listen to CRY. With over 15,000 people in our area, that means you can reach 11,000 listeners or more by advertising on CRY. If you'd like to tell those listeners about your business, give us a call now on 024 91199 or email us on programmes@yallradio.com.
Broadcasting to Yall Town and the surrounding rural area on 104 FM, you're in tune with Community Radio Yall. Community Radio Yall is closing down now. Programs will recommence tomorrow at noon. From all of us here at CRY, we wish you a very good night.